Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again for Parenting Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Here's your first question. Last November, we agreed to allow our daughter to go on a Leaving Cert holiday this summer. At the time, she was studying hard and in good form. However, over the last 6 months, she's become a nightmare. She stopped caring about the exams, performed quite poorly in her mocks. She got very drunk at her friend's 18th birthday party numerous times. We're also worried she's taken drugs at one or two of them. Judging by her behaviour when she got home in the early hours of the morning, we never had to be strict with her, but we're trying to keep her on the straight and narrow these past few months. But it's been a real struggle. She says her exams have gone okay, but we aren't confident she's going to get the results she should have. My reason for emailing Joanna is that her daughter is going on a 6-year holiday to Ibiza next month, and we're very worried about her going. We now think she doesn't have the cop on to mind herself, and she could get into all sorts of trouble. Should we stop her from going? She's 18, but behaving so immaturely.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tricky one. This is reminding me a little bit of, you know, the scooter incentive that we talked about last week. But it's in other ways, it's very different, because I'm wondering, Sean, like, what changed 6 months ago with this girl that she went from being a kid that these parents could say, absolutely, go on your 6-year holiday, we're not worried about that, or certainly not worried any more than any of us would worry about our kids being on holidays. And then I'm just wondering that if all of a sudden she started changing 6 months ago, might they consider her emotionally, emotionally a late developer, you know, that she has hit what we'd call this kind of risk-taking, boundary-pushing phase of development a bit later. So that can then look like a good girl who's become a bad girl, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But actually it was that she really hadn't gone into that stage of development where all of our teenagers do push boundaries, test limits, and engage in high risk-taking, negative risk-taking behaviour. But it sounds like when she did arrive at it, she really did arrive at it. When it comes to now changing the holiday boundary, this is a really tricky one, because if this is going on 6 months, I'm wondering, have you as parents flagged to her when she came home drunk, or you suspect she was coming home high? Did you flag to her the next day, look, the holiday's in jeopardy. If this continues, the holiday might have to go. What, or is it now at this stage with just weeks to go that you're thinking maybe she shouldn't go?
Yeah.
Because if you haven't been flagging this to her, then you haven't been making a connection to her that her behavior is undermining her chances of going on holiday. Don't assume she's joining those dots herself, because I would say she's not. But if you've been thinking all along, because of her behavior, she shouldn't go, and she's not on the same page, you're going to have a battle with this. Now, when it comes to boundary setting, as always, boundaries are flexible, they're adaptable, they bend without breaking. So you are having to hold a boundary with her here, and she's pushing it with the behavior. But you agreed to her going on this holiday at a time when you had, let's say, low concerns about risk-taking behavior. Now, since then, your concerns have increased as her risk-taking behavior has increased. This fact allows you to revisit the discussion about the holiday. You can say, look, there's been changes. We agreed to it then. Things have changed. Now we need to re-talk about it. But it may not be realistic to forbid it, because first of all, I imagine it's already paid for with 3 or 4 weeks to go. Mm. And second of all, she's 18 years old. If it's paid for and she wants to go, she can go.
Yeah.
That's the other way. I mean, you know, in terms of, we might think parentally she shouldn't go, but she technically, legally, she could go. And I just think that you might be better off to sit with her, share your concerns with her. You know, look, things have been really tricky for the last 6 months. You know, things changed. When we said you could go on this holiday, we weren't worried about you drinking too much or taking lots of drugs. That wasn't something we were concerned about. But to be honest with you, now we are concerned about it. So now we need to talk to you. You're not saying she can't go, but you're saying that you've shifted from comfortable to anxious and you're worried about her going. You really do need to talk to her, because she's just sounding a little emotionally immature there. Talk to her about people who can seek to prey on young women who might be vulnerable. So she must ensure that she and her friends keep an eye on each other. They don't get separated from each other. They don't drink excessively, don't accept drink or drugs from people she doesn't know well, like the really kind of basics that you are going to have to cover with her. Because if you never thought she would do this, I imagine you've never had that chat with her.
Yeah.
So you are going to have that chat with her. Tell her as well, and give her this protective factor, that if she finds herself on holiday, If the situation she's in feels out of control for her, she is to call you no matter what time it is, no matter what state she's in, no matter who she's with. She is to call you and you will stay on the phone until she is home or she's in a police station, so that she knows no matter what, there's no judgment or trouble. When she's in a situation, if she's in a situation that she can't control, she is to call you first and foremost, and you will keep up, you stay on the phone with her until she's back with friends or back home or back safe, so that you're actually putting in safety plans with her for going on this holiday, which, to be honest, Sean, is actually useful to do for anyone who's, there's many, many parents whose kids are going on Leaving Cert holidays next month and the 2 months after that. Like, these are real conversations to sit down and have, no matter how well behaved, compliant, good your kids are. When they're away from us, when they're with their friends and lots of other teenagers from other schools, they do know, they don't know, when they're all away together and the boundaries are different and the control is different, none of us know how that's going to affect us until we're in the situation. So having those conversations is a good idea.
Yeah. Still, though, they're going to be worried out of their mind.
Yeah, it is a lot of worry. And you know what? For the duration of the holiday, I think, you know, and knowing lots of people who parents of kids go at that age going away on holidays, I think no matter, you've had all the chats and the calls and you know they're good and you know they're going to be okay, parents worry until, from the moment they take off until the moment they're back. So, but what you want to do is at least level with her. Our level of worry has gone from what would be normal worry for any parent to being bigger. And it's gone bigger because your behavior has changed. So we need to be able to have an open conversation with you now about how to keep yourself safe when you're not with us.
Yeah. A lot of people saying, text to say, book your own flight to Ibiza. Maybe, I assume not be wandering around after them, but it may be if you were there and you get that phone call that, you know, you can say, where are you? You can get there fairly quickly rather than if you're in Ireland, you can't do much.
Oh, absolutely. Other than, as I said, stay on the phone. I mean, she's definitely not going to say, what a great idea, Mom and Dad, come with me on my Leaving Cert holiday. You know, that's not going to help. And there is something, though, Sean, with our teenagers who are 18, they're finishing school, they're about to go out into the world much more independently, be it to third level education or work or whatever they're going to do, that we also have to trust in the job we've done as their parents, that we have to be able to trust them that they know, they fundamentally know right from wrong. We've done enough that they can keep themselves safe. And when we don't have that belief, at least sit down with them and say, I need to tell you the story of my worry and what exactly I'm worried about and why.
Yeah. They're 18. They won't listen. I know. And then they'll go off and do it anyway.
Yeah, you're right. Don't be worried. I'll be grand. Me and my friends will do. But you know what? Maybe they do need to go and have that moment as well. I mean, the holiday has been agreed to and it is happening imminently.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I'm anxious on behalf of these parents, even just thinking about it. I'm hoping you can help me. There's a new pop song by Sabrina Carpenter that is everywhere at the moment. You can't open a social media app without hearing the chorus to Please, Please, Please. If you're unfamiliar with the song, one of the lyrics includes a curse word, mother effer, which my son takes absolute delight in singing from the top of his lungs. He's only 3 and doesn't understand that it's a bad word. He just enjoys the song. I find it quite funny, but I'm worried he'll say it at play school or in a setting he shouldn't. Should I pull him up on it? How do I explain my reasons to a 3-year-old?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much in this one. This reminds me actually of a little boy I once knew who would come in to see me. And every time he would see me, he'd greet me by turning his back, shaking his bum at me while singing, I'm sexy and I know it. And he would do this every single time I come. And he was the exact same age. But it tended to get him a really big reaction. Mm. And that's why he was doing it. So that's what we really noticed, was that it was getting him such a big reaction and he enjoyed the reaction. And what I started to do with him, and I think I'm telling you this because I think it would be useful for this parent as well, is that I started to respond to him by singing in the same tune, turning my back, shaking my bum back and saying, you know, I'm funny and I know it. And then I would shake my legs and say, I'm fast and I know it, or wiggle my arms and say, I'm strong and I know it. And we turned it into which of us could come up with more creative ways used to sing the song. And very quickly it stopped being I'm sexy and I know it. And it became all of these other things about he's fast, he's strong, he's funny, all of those things. So I'm wondering if this parent could also do this, that they could play with the word, they could sing it with his name, like instead of, you know, that word that's in the song, yeah, I'm going to go with words that rhyme here. So, you know, if say the child's name is, let's say, Jamie, for example, that they get to that part of the song and they say Jamie Trucker, Rubber Ducker, Chicken Clucker, and they start playing with the words and giving him funny things, to words you make up that just happen to rhyme, being playful with language. Like one of the ways that we really play with our young children, especially when they're developing language skills, is with sounds and with phoneme, you know, those kind of sounds that have meaning, like uh-oh, oops, oops-a-daisy, and playing with your voice. So you could really engage with him on this in a playful way. So instead of scolding him, because he's not going to get it, he's not, he doesn't know what that word means. Yeah. And all he knows is, and you probably did laugh the first time he said it, he knows that it gets a big reaction from adults and he is playing with that reaction. So if you respond playfully, make it exciting to sing it creatively, I think you'd actually get rid of it a lot quicker than saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it.
Yeah, yeah. Our four-year-old won't allow any clutter on the floor of her bedroom at bedtime. This is a problem. Before she gets into bed, she clears everything away and won't even allow her teddies or books on her bed. I know this sounds great because most kids are untidy, but we worry about the obsessional nature of it. We try to encourage her to keep one of her dollies or teddies in bed with her, but she won't entertain it and will start crying or screaming when we try to do this. How do we get her to be more accepting of clutter and get her over this idea that everything has to be cleared away at nighttime?
I mean, I totally am anticipating now so many parents going, oh my goodness, I wish I had this problem. But yes, I also get where this parent writing in is coming from. And I'm wondering, given her age, Sean, I wonder if tidy up time is part of her preschool routine, you know, where it's celebrated, they get praised for it, they're encouraged to do it, there might be a tidy up song, and it's a key part of, we're done with this, we tidy up, we move on. So, you know, that can happen whether your child is attending like a childcare service, your preschool hours, whatever it might be. I'm wondering if she's learning it there, you know, if that's something that she's used to getting praise for. And here are her parents saying, don't be worried about that, leave the stuff on the floor. Mm. So just get curious about that. I'm also wondering if, have there been any other changes in her little life, you know, a new baby, a house move, any changes in teachers or minders that she might have, any changes? Because when something like that happens and we have that sense that the change is out of our control, we will often, any of us, never mind children, but we will grapple with something that gives us a semblance of control. But I can't bring the teacher back, but I can make sure my floor is always tidy and I can make sure that this is always the way my toys are exactly where they're supposed to be. So I would just be again curious about that, that is she using some semblance of control to settle herself about something else that she might be worried about? What you could do, though, in response to this, bit of a theme today, I think, is build in some playfulness around her need to tidy. So you would do that by tidying with her, singing a song while you do it, making it a race to tidy up, naming colors, you know, just tidy up the blue things, now the green things, now the yellow things, making it more structured, more challenge-based, so that you're putting in fun, eliciting some laughter from her, because I'm just thinking that a good old authentic laugh before bed is a great way to release any residual tension or worry that the body might be holding. So you could take the thing that she's exerting control with and you could make it playful for her. After the tidying, and actually you could do this beforehand when she's starting to tidy, but certainly afterwards, give her a tight, squeezy hug, a lot of that deep pressure type of hug, just in case there is any bubbling worries in her body. A deep, squeezy hug, putting what we call proprioceptive pressure, so that kind of deep pressure touch in the skin, is a really good way to give a sense of safety. It's okay, I got you. We can come down now. So I would give her that after tidy up time, just as a reassuring touch. And then when she is in bed, bring it into a more nurturing, playful touch, that even just with a cotton ball, that you're going to just give her a little face massage using a kind of, you know, the kind of pressure that you feel. It doesn't hurt, but it's not tickly. That middle kind of pressure all around her face while she closes her eyes. And again, you're using that deep pressure touch to relax her and just to co-regulate her with you. So if there is any worry bubbling underneath this need to tidy, you're responding and speaking directly to the worry rather than getting caught up in should the toys be on the floor or not.
Yeah. But given that she's four, I assume you're never going to find out what the source, if there is a worry there, what the source of that actual worry is.
I mean, generally not. I mean, there's always the four-year-old who, you know, built for therapy, who wants to pull up a chair and tell you in detail all of their worries and problems. And she, in fairness, at four, you might not even know yourself what the cause is. You know, you might just be having a feeling in your body and you don't have the words, the emotional fluency to say, hey, this is what's up. And instead, you're just trying to act out of that sensation. So the worries at that age are more embodied. So that's why you want to do with play. You are really doing the communication rather than speaking it. And play is a very embodied way to communicate. So if you're doing singing, dancing, making it a race or a relay, you get one, I get one. Let's roll the ball to each other. I'll sit by the toy box. You bring the toys to me. I'll put them in. If you're doing things like that, you're really responding to what's happening in her body.
Yeah. Our 9-year-old son has developed a tic where he keeps blinking or sometimes shakes his head slightly. Every time he does it, we call him out on it and tell him to stop, but it seems to be getting worse, particularly around stressful times like on a match day, for example. We keep asking him why he is doing it. He doesn't seem to have an answer. He says it's involuntary. How do we stop him from doing this? Because I'm very worried it will hold him back in life.
I mean, I think he's a very wise little kid. He's telling you the truth. You know, he doesn't know what's causing it and it is involuntary. You know, so first and foremost, don't criticize the behavior. Don't call him out on it. I think that's the phrase, you know, don't use that because he is not in control of this. So when he's saying, you know, if you say to a child, why are you doing this? And they say to you, I don't know. I think we need to believe them. Like, I would say more often than not, they really don't know why they're doing it. So I think he's letting you know it's involuntary. So it's something he's also aware of that he's not able to stop. I'm wondering what else might be going on in his life. Just take a step back from this apparent tick and just get curious. Have there been any changes or upheaval or stress or tension at home? At school, has he had any emotional experiences with his peer group or in any activities he's involved in, extended family? Is there anything else that might be just bubbling beneath the surface for him? And try to think of it from the perspective of a 9-year-old and specifically your 9-year-old. Because as adults, we might think, oh, sure, that was no big deal and that was 6 months ago. That's not how it works for children. So apparent small experiences can resonate really deeply. And children can seem fine initially with something. And it's after a few months when they realize, oh, this change is permanent, that we can see the reaction to what's happened. Generally, Sean, we're looking at when tics, these kinds of behaviors, when they're present for about 1 year or a little over a year, then it's something that is teetering into, we might need to look at that and assess for disorders or if there's anything else going on. But in truth, tics can come and go in childhood, and they tend to really peak around that 9 to 12-year-old age. Most of them, for most kids, do just work themselves out over a period of time. There isn't a whole lot in terms of, you know, empirical scientific evidence about what causes a tick and what causes it to go. It's simply a phenomenon that we are observing. So what you're describing with the blinking of the eyes there is a motor tick. So if it was something with sound, it would be a phonic tick. But this is very much a motor tick that you're, and at the moment, I don't know how long it's there for, but if it's only recent, you know, just call it his blinking. You know, don't even label it a tick right now because you don't really know what's happening or causing it. The main and best advice I could give when any of your children might be doing something like this is don't react negatively to it. Don't draw attention to it. You're doing it again. Stop doing it. Don't do any of that. Ensure that he's getting really good sleep and there's good sleep hygiene, you know, no screens before bed or in bed, that he's going at a reasonable hour, that you're doing a bedtime story and a nice wind down so he's going to sleep calmly and peacefully as much as any of us can, now bearing in mind. But take a break then. If you notice that he's doing this blinking it during a particular activity, let's say for argument's sake he's watching TV and he starts doing that with his eyes, take a break from the activity when you notice it and switch to something else. Okay. Mm-hmm. And don't say, we're stopping because you're doing your eyes. Just say, oh, pause that for a second. I need you to come and do something over here for me. Or let's go outside. I want to look for something in the garden, whatever it might be. Have a cuddle with him is another thing. So just come up and say, oh, I'd love to give you a big hug. Is that okay if I give you a hug right now? And give him that tight, squeezy hug. But getting outdoors is also very effective, because changing the field of vision, the environment that we're in, is a really effective way to reset a busy, overwrought, overstimulated brain. So just finding a reason to get outside, play a bit, kick a ball around, play chasing, you know, whatever it might be. Get him doing, but switch the activity that is activating the behavior in him, in other words. And then, look, I would say, just, it's easy for me to say, don't worry about this, when clearly you wrote in because you are already worried. But most kids do not require treatment or intervention for these, because most of these behaviors work themselves out and they outgrow them, basically. But if you are over and above worried, if, you know, I'm very aware, Sean, we get a snapshot of what someone is dealing with. But if there's more to it, or if me asking you if there's something else going on at home or school, or he's had a negative emotional experience, if that triggers something for you and you're like, oh, it could be that, then by all means, go and see your GP, ask for a referral, or get in touch with somebody, play therapist, a psychologist, a child psychotherapist, who would be able to support your son, but also you through this.
Yeah.
But based on what you're saying there, I would be saying, give this time and space, be curious about what else is going on, but really engage in playful distraction.
Joanna, thanks a million as ever. That was Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.